He pulls a knife.
Who's the U-boat commander?
You pull a gun.
I do.
That's nasty. Why?
That's Chet, Gary.
Now, Dustin Kaufman presents the ultimate Chicago movie cage match.
Tell me your children.
Yes, indeed. 312-981-7200. Welcome to the ultimate Chicago movie cage match here on WGN Radio. We've been talking about this for weeks. It is here. Our quest to find the best Chicago movie of all time. We started with 64 of them. Let the WGN Radio staff vote the first two rounds to get us to this point, the Sweet 16. Over the course of the next couple weeks, we're bringing matchups of Chicago movies. You call in, you text, you vote online for your favorite. Really make the case for why it's the best. The winners move on. The losers, well, they go home. We'll have advocates for each of the 16 movies in studio to duke it out. Last time we had Adventures in Babysitting barely beating out Backdraft to move to the Elite Eight. Tonight, one of the tougher matchups in the bracket, The Untouchables versus Home Alone. Al Capone, Elliot Ness, and Frank Ninny versus Kevin McAllister and the Wet Bandits. Brian De Palma and David Mamet versus John Hughes. 1920 Chicago featuring the Union Station Steps. And 1634 Racine against the boring suburban block that nothing ever happens on. And a house that continually shows up in the news whenever it changes hands. It's Untouchables. It's Home Alone. With some of the most quotable lines and screams in Chicago movie history.
What of mine? What draws my admiration? What is that which gives me joy?
Dames!
Music! Nice. Good.
Baseball!
You'd feel pretty sad if you woke up tomorrow morning and you didn't have a family.
No, I wouldn't.
Then say it again. Maybe it'll happen.
I hope I never see any jerks again.
Well then, you just fulfilled the first rule of law enforcement. Make sure when your shift is over, you go home alive.
I can't seem to find my toothbrush, so I'll pick one up when I go out today. Other than that, I'm in good shape.
She died like a pig.
What did she say?
I said that your friend died screaming like a stuck Irish pig.
Now you think about that when I beat the rat.
I'm up here, you morons! Come and get me! You guys give up, or you're thirsty for more?
Hey! Hey! Ah! Ah! Did he sound anything like that?
Kevin!
You want to get Capone? Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago.
312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you tonight on why you think either The Untouchables or Home Alone should move on. In studio tonight to rep for Home Alone is the brilliant comedian Kristen Toomey. Toomey just put out a new comedy album on Spotify, which is a huge smash hit, and she was an extra in Home Alone 2. She's headlining at Zany's tomorrow. Kristen, thanks for being here. Good to see you.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Wait a minute, conflict of interest. Conflict of interest.
No, no way. And Michael Phillips is here, the chief film critic for the Chicago Tribune, and he is in the Untouchables corner. Michael, great to see you, bud.
Good to see you.
All right, so I said it at the top. These are two movies with iconic lines. I mean, going through those clips is a lot easier than pulling lines from Adventures in Babysitting or Backdraft. Why did you advocate? Why did you say, sign me up for the Untouchables?
Oh, man. You know, I just love walking around this city of ours and just saying, yeah, that's the bridge right there, right? Lower Michigan Avenue, that's where Costner met Connery in that great scene in The Untouchables. Walk over to LaSalle Street, you know, and that, when I think of that shot of Connery, Costner, Charlie Martin Smith, and Andy Garcia walking into what was supposed to be the post office with about 50, 60 1931 era cars behind him, no green screen, no CGI, just a lot of Hollywood money making this thing look like the past. I don't know. I love it. That movie makes this town come to life, and kind of vice versa, like very few other movies shot in this town.
All right. Kristen, what was it when I reached out to you and you said Home Alone?
Oh, well, other than having been an extra in Home Alone 2 and O'Hare.
Where were you in O'Hare?
I was in O'Hare, yeah, and I got to miss a day of fifth grade to do that. And then I got cut out of it, and everybody thought I was lying at school.
Oh, no.
I had to bring my pay stub to prove it.
The VHS special, right?
Yeah. No, but Home Alone is such a iconic, you know, Christmas film comedy. for people my age growing up, it's like, buzz your girlfriend, woof. You know, just so many lines we quote all the time, you know, and it's just, my son looks like Kevin McAllister. It's in my blood, you know. That movie is just great.
We've been joking that if this were like the Sweet 16 and it was basketball, this is the home. This is home court advantage. The regional is being played in Christmas season for Home Alone, so Home Alone gets an extra oomph because it's on all the time. People are watching it. It feels like Home Alone's on their home court tonight.
I mean, they just did the live, you know, musical score by John Williams with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra with the screening there, like the last week. I
really.
Guess. So, yeah, I concede. No, I don't concede. Hell no.
312-981-7200. If you'd like to call in and text your support for either Home Alone or The Untouchables, now's the time to do it. We'll take our first break here, and we'll come back, and we'll get the true arguments of why one of these films should move on. Stay with us. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. We're already getting texts in. The Untouchables, not even close. Home Alone, all the way. And The Untouchables, after all, they do things the Chicago way. Michael Phillips in studio, repping for The Untouchables, and Kristen Toomey advocating for Home Alone. Kristen, let's start with you. Home Alone, why should this movie move on? I mean, obviously, it's up against The Untouchables, and you get plenty of time to rag on The Untouchables. But what is it about this movie? Why should this be the best Chicago movie?
I think that this movie is one of the greatest movies of my generation coming up. And the fact that it's set here and, you know, it has, you know, the lead is a adorable little Chicagoan kid, suburban kid.
I thought you were going to say something else there. An adorable little Chicagoan,
yes. Well, he has Kevin McAllister is very much that Chicago attitude.
He does,
as a little kid, you know, he doesn't take any stuff from his family, and you know, there's the cops. You know, when they're trying the Catherine O'Hara is great in
She's
it.
She's great,
and. She's trying to get through, and the cop's just like, yeah, I don't know, tell her to count her kids. You know, it's like, just.
It's unbelievable great. To me thinking about some of the connections. This is John Hughes, is what he does.
Right,
but
yeah.
But John Candy and Catherine O'Hara, yes, being in that scene where they're in the truck coming back.
The polka.
Yeah, and you realize quickly, you're like, that's SCTV. That's such a connection there. There's some really cool moments like that.
Second
Joe Pesci
City
as
alumni.
Well. I mean, one of his first movies, I would think, but that year was the same. I did not believe this, but it was the same year that Goodfellas came out. Goodfellas and Home Alone came out the same year. I don't know which one was first, but the idea that Joe Pesci's year was Home Alone and Goodfellas, that tells you a lot about right. Joe Pesci, right?
Right. It was big because had he done a Lethal Weapon by then?
Yeah, right.
He was. I forget. He wasn't in the first. Was yeah. he in the second? I lose track of
that. Where that he was up? Bleach yeah. blonde?
Yeah, he was.
Didn't he bleach his hair?
That's right.
So Joe Pesci. So what scene? What's the best scene in Home Alone?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. I mean, the lines are so quotable. Like, when I grow up and get married, I'm living alone. You know, that's just, I think about that all the time. But the best scene would probably, I mean, when he's railing them, you know, beaning them with.
Yeah, the big
paint cans. That's probably, I mean, that's probably got to be, you're thirsty or you're hungry for more, you know. That whole thing where he's setting up, my personal favorite is the montage of him setting up the house. I love, he's like, you know.
Which they went back to the well on at Home Alone 2, did not work as well.
No, it wasn't as good. It wasn't as good because you just wanted him to win, and there was something about being, you know, the kid defending his castle by himself is just, it's inspiring. My kids love it still today.
Yeah.
It holds up.
It's a great,
you know,
family movie.
And
how representative of Chicago was it? That's really where its weakness is, because it plays on a suburban block, and that's a famous, I think it's in Winnetka.
Yeah, Winnetka. Yeah.
There's a famous house.
The house is gorgeous.
And the Netflix show that just came out about how movies are made, they talked about the cast of Home Alone, and they showed how that movie was shot in one of the high schools nearby, like the interiors of the house.
Oh, really?
So that whole thing of them in the house, because the house was too small. That's what these guys were talking. It was too small to get everybody in and do things. So they made a replica in the gymnasium at Maine,
wow.
or one of the high schools.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So it just, and then they put it in the pool when it was the flooding of the basements for the Wet Bandits. That was in the pool of the high school so they could, you know, control the water. Anyway.
That's so creative.
So the other thing that makes Home Alone stand apart is the music. Mm-hmm. The music, as you mentioned, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and someone just texted in saying they just did it at Harper, and they're still singing the songs, and there's a, I mean, it's just amazing how that's a very emotional score.
Yeah.
And people love that music.
Yeah, and especially when whatever he's doing when he's setting up the house. I mean, it's like he's really going to get them. He's going to do it. And, you know, I think that the house is a character in the film. I think it's that. We all fell in love with that house.
Yeah.
You know, people drive by it and take pictures. All my friends, during Christmas season, they go and check out the house and tag themselves.
It's in the paper today. It's in the Tribune today. There's a piece about, even though it's 30 years later or whatever, that the Home Alone house has changed a block. The point being that still today has nothing to do with this, but just the idea that people are still talking about Home Alone.
I wonder if, based on what you say, that they filmed a lot of the interiors in the schools, if people actually walk around inside and think this isn't quite as big as it looked.
Yeah.
That's great. You wonder about that. Yeah.
I went to Astoria in Oregon where they shot Goonies, which was awesome, by the way, just to go see where the hills and the whole thing. But the house that they grew up on, they don't let you go up on the block or stop. They have signs up to say you will get ticketed or towed if you stand and take pictures of this house.
Really?
Because the new owner's like, I don't want anything to do with all of the people that are road tripping to come here and take pictures of my house.
It's got to be tough when you don't really know how
house. Come on. why are you hogging the house if you're not into that? Give it to somebody that wants
someone
that.
Else. Well, it's the same in San Francisco.
You don't have to live there.
The actual full house.
Yeah.
is all you can go, and you go over there, and it's like you follow the map, and you get there, and it looks nothing like the actual, because they kind of do the painted lady.
Right.
You think it's a painted lady house, but it's not. It's a different one, but they've redone it. So you're like, this is it? It's just an address. And you're like,
our 14-year-old would be on the plane tomorrow if we could even rent it for a month.
You might be able to. All right, so that's the case for Home Alone. But Michael Phillips says Untouchables is the film that's going to move all the way to the end. Why the Untouchables?
All right, I'm going to pull out my city snobbery here. I think you can rule in Untouchables, I think, for a lot of reasons. That is a true Chicago urban landscape of a certain time, and this is kind of the wonky part of it, but that film was made, shot in 86. It was just before a lot of technological stuff revolutionized how big budget and medium budget, small budget pictures would depict the past, right? Digital effects, not happening then. It was none of it was happening. Even stuff that was happening, you know, a few years later, but not that many years later, like in the Road to Perdition, which also has kind of, it's a gangster setting, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a period not that far from the Untouchables. You got shots of LaSalle Street, but that's all computerized digital, and Untouchables feels like it was made when it was set, even though it was 86, right? Because it's just old school Hollywood filmmaking. It's David Mamet. I mean, you want to talk about Chicago?
I had no idea that David Mamet was the writer of the Untouchables.
Absolutely, and he, you know, we'll talk a little more about the stuff that he's not responsible for in that movie, which is more than you might think, but that dialogue, I mean, you can talk about the big action sequences, just like you talk about, you know, the Home Alone climax is kind of the famous scene. In the Untouchables, it's the Odessa Step sequence in the train station, right, with the baby carriage and this incredible shootout that's like, you know, that's the reason De Palma wanted to make the movie, right? And that's just Chicago all the way, man. And when it's not an action scene, it's David Mamet's dialogue. That first scene where Costner meets Connery, it's just like, that's writing, you know? And it's just
this is a great line. Huh?
Yeah, right? There's a great line in there where he goes,
hard to beat.
Where Kevin Costner, he stops him from pulling out his badge or his gun, and he knows he has a gun there. He puts a billy club on the gun, Sean Connery, and he says, why do you have a gun? He goes, I'm a Treasury officer. And then he kind of walks away, and Costner runs up to him, and like, he's a bad cop, and he's like, why did you walk away when I'm packing? He goes, well, you said you're a Treasury officer. And he says, yeah, but I could have just told you, I guess. Now, why would you say you're a Treasury officer if you're not? Who makes that up? Yeah. And it was just such a great line to be like, yeah, that was great writing.
And even simple stuff that we've seen and heard a million times in other gangster movies, but when De Niro as Capone is just sort of just flying off on his, I want him dead. I want his family dead. I want his house burned to the ground, you know? And it's just this little 30-second rant, and it's like, yes, that's the right writer with the right actor in the right movie. And it makes you laugh a little bit because Mamet is a funny, he's got a real sharp sense of humor. But I just think that film's got a lot of juice. I got problems with it, and maybe you share them. I don't know. We'll find out. But,
okay, but here's if there's one scene to pull out of that film, what is it? I mean, because the baseball scene is amazing. Where that's close to the beginning.
And based on fact, I think it's been verified that Capone did club two or three associates with a baseball bat to death because they, you know, crossed him or like working off the take or something. But the baseball scene ties with the Union Station scene for me. But you know what? In a very quiet scene, my favorite scene in that picture is Del Close,
the alderman.
Improv master.
Oh my gosh.
It's the corrupt alderman who comes in just sort of glad-handing and throws an envelope of money down, and you know it doesn't go well for him. But I love that scene. That scene I love because that, I mean, you want to talk about like Chicago and nowhere else. It's that scene.
All right, real quick, the music for The Untouchables.
Oh my God.
Huge.
My God, Ennio Morricone, who's, you know, just finally won an Oscar for the Tarantino film Hateful Eight. I mean, he's, you know, did all of the Sergio Leone westerns. I mean, that music is great. Well, I hope we hear it. Are we going to hear a little bit later? Oh, man, I love it. And that's a film I would love, like they just did with Home Alone and the John Williams over at CSO. Man, I would be the first in line if the CSO played Morricone's score and they showed The Untouchables, Brain on the Wall, and you take your 11-year-old, they're freaking out at the violence. Very interesting scene.
They should do that at the Green Mill.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. Real gangster stuff.
All right. 312-981-7200 is phone number. What do you like? Do you like Home Alone or The Untouchables? We'll take our break. When we come back, Kristen and Michael will tell us why you shouldn't vote for the other film. it's going to get rough here in this cage match.
I've got to get my baseball bat.
That's right. The ultimate Chicago movie cage match here on 720 WGN. It's the ultimate Chicago movie cage match. Holly is on the line. Holly, which movie do you like?
Well, I'm going to have to go with The Untouchables because Home Alone, if you're from Chicago, Home Alone's not a Chicago movie. It's a Chicagoland suburb movie.
But do you really believe that, though? Because I grew up in Wonder Lake, Illinois, and I assumed Home Alone, even though it was in Winnetka, to be Chicago.
No, I never assumed it to be in Chicago.
Right.
No, that's definitely Winnetka all the way. That's not Chicago.
And I just feel, okay, thank you. Awesome. All right, we'll take that one, Holly. That's The Untouchables. But I don't know. I feel like we're nitpicking now.
Yeah, I think that's a little.
I'm sorry, are you undermining my supporter? What are you doing? This is the most corrupt hour of radio. This is a classic
Del Close. Yep.
It's the Chicago way.
Chicago way. Michael Phillips, the chief film critic over at the Chicago Tribune. Kristen Toomey, great Chicago comedians headlining at Zany's tomorrow night here in Chicago in Old Town. All right, 312-981-7200. We're arguing which is the better Chicago film that's going to move on to the Elite Eight. Is it The Untouchables or is it Home Alone? Should we tell you how they got here?
Yeah.
In the 64, The Untouchables was the number one seed in the Wabash division, and then easily defeated the blaxploitation film Monkey Hustle, was the 16 seed. Do you know that one? With I think Yaphet Kotto's in that.
Right.
And then destroyed Julia Stiles and saved The Last Dance in the second round. Mm-hmm. So Untouchables had it pretty easy getting this far. Not to say that Home Alone didn't. Home Alone had zero trouble. I think it was almost unanimous getting past the film Wanted. And then in the second round, dispatched Public Enemies to arrive here in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, nice. Well, I mean, they both deserve to get that far.
So here we are, two titans in the Wabash division looking to move on. all right, let's get to another caller before we get to the anti and see if we can get Michael on the line. Michael, which do you like? You like Untouchables or Home Alone?
Home Alone, because our family is good friends with John Candy from way back.
Oh, great. That's awesome.
Nice.
He's awesome in that film.
John had told me that when he filmed, he said, my career wasn't going anywhere until he hooked up with John Hughes. And he said when he filmed Uncle Buck, he was getting paid $53,000 a day, and the movie took 6 to 8 weeks to film. So it's about $1.5 million compared to us, $20 million that the guys get nowadays. But I have like 1,000 stories. I used to run a restaurant across the street from the U.S. Blues Bar called Burton Place.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew John Belushi's best friend, Steve Pashakis, and he would tell me stories. And I knew, you know, Chris Farley and all these guys back in the 80s when they're at Second City. So I one day want to write a book.
You should.
But it's funny, living in Winnetka right now, I know the guy that owns the Home Alone house.
Nice.
He's so angry that people came by, and it's like, what'd you buy the house for? There's only 1,000 houses.
That's exactly what Kristen said.
Yeah,
why'd you buy the house?
Around it. He doesn't want anybody to come in there. He got rid of the rounding driveway. It's like, no one really cares that you're there. You know, out of town people might take a picture. Nobody else really cares in the neighborhood. You
well,
know?
I look.
And it's the old man that lives next door, they have that house, and no one takes the picture of that house.
No one wants the old man's house. Well, Michael, I look forward to the book. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, it's called The Unofficial Barography is the name of the book.
There you go.
Nice.
All right, thanks, Michael. Well, there you go. That's a vote for Home Alone and also John Candy.
Yeah.
John Candy is now, I think he leads because we had in the first round was Blues Brothers versus Uncle Buck. And Blues Brothers won, but John Candy shows up in both, obviously the lead in Uncle Buck, but he also shows up in Blues Brothers. And here he is again in Home Alone. It is true, John Candy is in a lot of these Chicago films.
And Only the Lonely, which is not, I don't know, not in the bracket, but very Chicago film,
There you go. Yep.
He's the most Chicago, non-Chicago in history.
Exactly. Another one, too, I want to say this is the second Robert De Niro film, because Backdraft. Robert De Niro plays the detective in Backdraft.
Oh, I've never seen Backdraft. I got to see it now.
You should. It's good. It's got a lot of great Chicago stuff in it.
I've never seen Untouchables either.
Oh.
They're going to have a hard time here.
What?
Yeah. See, there you go.
Sorry.
All right. So let's start with Michael and get into why Home Alone should go home.
Well, look, I the appeal of that film is universal. You know, the film made a half $1 billion worldwide when that came out. It was the number one film in the U.S. that year, 1990. So, you know, the appeal is unquestioned, and I hate it. I just don't. And here's the reason. Okay, that kind of slapstick for me, there's something about when you just basically make slapstick violence. I don't get it.
You don't like the Three Stooges?
I don't
or
like
Buster
this. You know,
Keaton
I Bill,
Charlie
hold
Chaplin?
On, hold on. You can't mention Keaton and the Three Stooges in the same universe, man.
it's slapstick.
No,
it's physical.
But, Keaton is fantastic, though. Keaton's a genius. I think the Stooges, and I love
but
Curly.
But he also did things where he got hurt. He broke
lots,
his neck.
Lots, but it's different.
That was
different.
The bit.
Okay,
you know?
Let me. Roger Ebert, okay?
Yeah.
Compared it to Last House on the Left. Have you seen Last House on the Left?
Yeah, I fainted during that.
Okay. So
why did you faint?
Because there was a violent scene.
No, that's a rough scene.
Yeah.
But Ebert brings up, that's the one film he compared Home Alone to.
What?
He gave it 2.5. He didn't
he
like it.
He also didn't like Untouchables, which surprised me. He gave 2.5
to
Untouchables.
Okay, I retract the Ebert reference.
Even.
All right, here's one thing. I don't know if I agree with all this, but I'm just saying. There's a guy from Dan Jackson, a Thrillist, says, there's surely a defense to be made of Home Alone's absurd violence by saying it's merely a live-action cartoon, right? As a child, it's easy to be sucked in by the violent fantasies peddled by these movies, but at a certain point, the film's constant violence starts to wear you down, and you have to leave these movies behind for slasher films. So he's basically saying it's a gateway drug for slasher films. I don't go that far. I agree. But Dave Kerr from the Tribune said, the slapstick violence, already astonishingly intense in the first film, in the second film even grew more graphic and sadistic. Okay, so it's funny how that film, right or wrong, and like it or not, the film did change everybody's idea of what screen slapstick was for that generation.
Are you blaming? It's
not my
violence
thing.
On Home Alone. Like, are you blaming systemic societal violence?
All
on
of
Home
it.
Alone?
Every all of it. No,
it's like video games in Home Alone.
Isn't your movie about killing people with baseball bats? What's going on?
So why?
How did I get the violent movie?
So why to me is Home Alone actually the more sadistic film of the two? I don't.
It is.
I do. Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah,
to me. Yeah, it is.
To you,
me.
It is.
But for me, Home Alone, I think the other thing that kind of rankles, and I don't.
I think it's cute violence.
It's,
and there are little mini cars and paint cans ornaments.
Yeah, there is. There's all that. It's not my thing, man. I think Culkin's talent is what, to me, just absolutely sort of salvages it. I think that guy's comic instincts at that age, stunning, And look, I got some problems with a lot of the Untouchables. I think Kevin Costner is barely adequate in the leading role, and yet I still love most of that movie.
Now, the problem I have with the Untouchables, and I'll help you here, Kristen, is that the movie really plays itself as this is a biopic. This is a historical
fantasy.
Fiction.
Nothing's
but
true
that's what. But that's the point. Like at the end, when he throws Frank Nitti off the no. That's not that never happened.
No, never
and
happened.
So you get to a certain point where you're like, I'm supposed to believe that it was the baseball scene was true, and I'm supposed to believe that Elliot Ness did this and got Capone. But I don't know what to believe, and I feel like that's what Hollywood kind of got away.
I don't go to
it.
The movies. It's like, but now I don't go to the movies for truth. I just don't. If it's a film like that, and in fact, the only kind of historical thing that's of interest on the script is that Mamet didn't write any of those scenes. He didn't have Nitti
really?
Flying off the roof. He didn't have the shootout at the train station.
Did they just add that?
The script
is probably too boring without it.
A little yucky. It says the woman who hasn't actually seen the movie, but that's all right.
I'm just saying that's probably why they had to add it. Probably a real snooze fest.
Costner, seeing it again, man, Costner really was, he had yet to really kind of figure out exactly how to like activate a performance. And that in the middle of a cast that has Connery, like you've got the Oscar for that, Andy Garcia, who was brand new then, and was like, yeah, who's this movie star? Everybody's great, and then Costner's like doing the best he can, you know.
So, but, Kristen, you haven't seen Untouchables,
because I'm not a middle-aged white man.
Oh,
that's why,
man.
I missed it.
Yeah.
I will watch it now, but I also feel like, you know what? It's just glorifying Capone again, you know, which is, you know, what we do here in this city. Boy, do we love that murder.
Yeah, we really do.
And
you're talking about McAllister now?
I'm talking about the...
Well, there's something to be said, too, that The Untouchables is extremely violent.
Yeah.
And I get it that it's Capone and the whole bit, but they even, like, there's... The whole point of the film is to show that Elliot Ness has to do things that aren't necessarily legal. Up to that point, he was being so legal, so he has to be a little bit illegal, and he does things like the scene where he takes the already dead gangster on the ground and he shoots him to prove that he's to make the guy talk. There's a lot of gratuitous violence in The Untouchables as well, or probably
no
more
question
than
about it. These are truly apples and oranges, but no, absolutely, no, but you're absolutely right.
Also, I think that there's a lot of stories like gangster movies and things like that that have come out, but like Home Alone is, you know, an original story that is full of, you know, it was like the highest grossing comedy for 30 years,
right?
You know, which is pretty incredible. And it's an original story. It's pretty universal, like, other than this guy doesn't like it.
Me and Ebert, losers.
This
guy over here. But I think if you want to watch a crime history, you know, that's...
There's
turn
a lot
on
of that. There's
A&E
a lot of that.
Or something. Yeah. That's always a documentary going on.
I guess it hurts a little to hear, like Buster Keaton said in the same sentence, is that, you know, the stuff he did and that kind of slapstick was just, you know, kids, you know.
I was defending slapstick in general.
Yeah, yeah. No, and me too, man. I mean, Keaton is the best of the best.
Right. Mm.
And
this cage match turned into a love fest. I was hoping for you guys.
If we just had Keaton in this final 16, we'd both love. But I just think, it's the kind of slapstick violence that, to me, is more violence than slapstick.
Does the sequels hurt Home Alone?
No, I think it stands on its own. I think the sequels are more of a money grab, like you said earlier. But I think, you know, that's just how it is. If something works, they want to redo it, like the story of Al Capone.
Now, there's been some people on Facebook, and we heard the caller say that it's not really a Chicago movie because it's in the suburbs. I don't buy that. I'm trying to bring us together, not divide us. This is the whole Chicagoland area when I say Chicago. But the other thing, too, though, is people point out the film is not doesn't really do anything besides be on that block. You know, they show the O'Hare, I think, with her Kevin, and she comes back. Or she, I don't think we ever see O'Hare except running through it. But the point being, there's not necessarily a huge Chicago thing. And would we even be having Home Alone in the Sweet 16 if it wasn't Christmas time? And that's what people were throwing out, saying Home Alone, if this was July and you did this Sweet 16 in July, people may vote differently on Home Alone. It's the season that gets you so excited and nostalgic for Home Alone.
I think that film is... the popularity is so big with Home Alone. I mean, just it's been revered for so many years now that I don't think that would be a factor. I don't. I don't know if I agree with this, but I have heard some kind of pretty sincere objections to it. They're kind of like, just they don't like the bubble that it's set in. Not just the block, but like this sort of, you know, upper middle class white people problems comedy. You know, of the whole thing. I don't know. Then you're actually writing off the entire John Hughes thing. Everything he ever did. So I, you know, that's not, to me, that's an overreach, you know. Yeah. But I don't know.
Both of these films seem to be very set in white people. The Untouchables. Yeah. I don't know if there are any African Americans in The Untouchables. And no. Andy Garcia's
there's
in
a
it,
lot of ethnic slurs in The Untouchables.
And I'm not sure that in Home Alone there's anybody of color as well. So I think that these are both pretty lily white films.
Of their time.
That's the late 80s.
Right.
Hollywood.
Right.
All right. 312-981.
Julia Roberts is Harriet Tubman. Did you hear that?
Oh, my God.
They were trying to cast
her. Was that the craziest thing you ever heard?
That was nuts.
And anyone who's been in Hollywood, and you both have, that's not surprising that you would hear
I can imagine that meeting.
VP of, and some agent said that.
You got that Tubman script? What about Roberts?
312-981-7200. We'll take a break here. We'll come back. We'll get some trivia, and then we will crown a winner who moves on in the Elite Eight between The Untouchables and Home Alone. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. We are in the ultimate Chicago movie cage match. Kristen Toomey and Michael Phillips fighting it out between The Untouchables and Home Alone. It is close. I will say that the texters tonight have been pretty even. I will say that here's some texts that have come in from 301 saying both films were set and made in Chicago, but the bulk of Home Alone was filmed on a set built inside an abandoned school, whereas The Untouchables were used several iconic Chicago locations. So Untouchables for me. I vote Untouchables just because of the scene we talked about with the, she said Kevin Costner shoots the dead guy in the mouth.
it really makes it sound like a classy film. You know?
815 says Home Alone. For sure, go to another state and ask where it was. No one knows Winnetka. They'll say Chicago. Multiple children going to visit relatives. Kids not doing what they're supposed to be doing. People robbing houses, threatening the safety of your child. Snow, Christmas.
Yes.
There's a lot going on in that film. Untouchables at Union Station today. That staircase, says 312, which is true. I think a lot of people, when they go into Union Station, they stop and take a picture of that staircase, not because of the great architecture, but because of that scene from The Untouchables. And then the last one here was Return to Me, Ever in the Running. That's no, it was not. It was a bubble. It was a bubble. Didn't make it. So Pete Zimmerman's here, and he, of course, gives us a trivia from some of the things that we may not have paid attention before we tally the votes for tonight. Pete, what do you got from the trivia desk?
And just real quick, I don't know if this has ever been resolved. Lethal Weapon 2, 1989.
Oh, okay.
Home Alone, 1990, September. Or no. Goodfellas, September. Home Alone, November of 1990. Wow. So right around the time.
This is after Goodfellas? Home Alone is after Goodfellas?
Just a little bit.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's also 10 years after Pesci and De Niro were in Raging Bull.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm not saying, what a year.
To come out one month to have Home Alone and then Goodfellas.
Robert De Niro turned down the role of Harry Lime.
Oh.
Went to, no, De Niro. John Lovitz said no. And then Pesci.
Pesci took it.
Swooped in.
Interesting. I don't know if De Niro and I'm coming up there, kid.
It has to be Pesci. From a treehouse. Marv. I love it.
The cast and Daniel Stern.
Daniel Stern and him together.
Who was actually supposed to play the lead? This wouldn't have been much better in my view, but who was supposed to play the lead in The Untouchables, the Costner role? Don Johnson.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, kind of a... Yeah.
He's good in The Watchmen this time around.
Yeah.
He wasn't... Yeah. All right. So those are good. What else
the Lyric Opera benefited from the movie Snowfall, Home Alone. When filming of Home Alone Wrap, the production donated some of the artificial snow they had created to the Lyric Opera of Chicago. It's been used in a number of their productions.
They couldn't just go to the Target and get fake snow like we all do around Christmas?
Pull it out of the couch cushion? Come on.
Home Alone, also very big in Poland.
Oh, okay.
Christmas tradition. People love watching it in Poland.
This
They've been through a lot. They've been through a lot.
Brian De Palma considered a prequel to The Untouchables starring Nicolas Cage, but it never got off the ground.
Oof.
And, of course, Untouchables earning Sean Connery his only Oscar.
Wow. Connery's so good in it. Which we still don't answer the question, though, why with such a Scottish brogue.
why is he Irish
and why is he in Chicago? It's a strange little kind of thing there. All right. Well, there you go. Kristen Toomey is a comedian. She is at Zany's tomorrow night. Go check her out. Michael Phillips, you can read him in the Tribune all the time.
All the time.
As a chief film critic of the Chicago Tribune. All right. So I go to our poll, which we put up earlier this week, and I will go to the poll numbers. So we'll do this real quick. I'll hit the number. Beep, boop, 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 beep, boop, 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 boop. The Untouchables got 56% of the vote. Home Alone, 43%.
Oh, man.
So if you add that to the essentially dead heat tonight, it looks like The Untouchables is going to move on to the elite.
I truly thought I was going to go Home Alone, you know?
No, I think
a lot of confidence there.
I was up against a professional. I mean, you know.
So this means that the Untouchables moves on to the Elite Eight, and that means, Michael, you'll be back to fight it out. And I believe right now, if you look at the Sweet 16 brackets, it'll be between Wayne's World and High Fidelity.
Ooh.
So the winner of that film will take on the Untouchables to get to the Final Four.
Yikes.
And that's coming up Wednesday night, or Thursday. Tuesday night, next Monday night. I can't remember which ones. Kristen, you got to come back because we're trying to work it out where the losers come back kind of Bachelor style.
Oh, yeah.
And they come trying to derail in some form. We haven't figured it out in the writer's room how that's actually going to work.
Come and heckle.
Yeah.
I could come and sit in the corner
and
yell.
But a great night tonight. The Untouchables moves on. Home Alone goes home. But you know what? The consolation prize, you can watch Home Alone for free all Christmas season long because they just put that on Freeform or whatever on a loop. Right. You just watch Home Alone.
Kristen, I know. It's like the new It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah. They play it all the time. Home Alone 2 as well. Who also was an extra. Kristen was an extra in Home Alone 2. Great to see you. Good luck with the show tomorrow night.
Thank you.
Michael, we'll see you in January. Sound good?
Good. It was fun, guys.
Awesome.